This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Procedures.
Go.
Inco.
Go.
FAO.
We are go.
Network.
Go.
Recovery.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go, fly.
Good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon. It's 10 minutes after 5 o'clock. This is Charlottesville Right Now. It's News Radio 1070 WINA. My name is Coy Barefoot. Welcome to the second hour of the program. It's 67 degrees in Central Virginia. Absolutely beautiful. Was it just gorgeous out there just now? It's really something, isn't it?
It was more gorgeous earlier today. I think now it's getting a little overcast.
Oh, because front's moving in. Bring a little rain with it? I think so.
Maybe
aren't we supposed to get some rain? Yeah,
but
look at that. Tonight, some rain. There it is right there. Tonight, a little rain. Tomorrow, a little rain. Saturday, a little rain. Sunday, a little rain. I said bring it on, though. That's flowers.
I've been in conference rooms and meetings all day, Coy, so I haven't been paying attention.
What fun, Brian. Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. It's online at cvilletomorrow.org. You can check out the news center there, as well as a local calendar for all the public meetings to point you in the right direction to participate in your local government. That's what it's all about. That's the big theme of this program, Get Involved. Care enough to get involved and participate and make this country stronger, beginning with your own community. I haven't talked to you yet since that big meeting at the Albemarle County, the first public hearing about the county budget, which was just huge. You were there. You were emailing me while you were sitting there.
I was there. It was about, I think, 5.5 hours I was sitting there.
It was something. I watched the last 2.5-3 hours online.
Well, did you watch the video feed?
Yeah. The live video feed.
Wasn't that cool?
Very cool. Yeah,
well,
that was cool.
The school division decided to set up the video cameras like at the last minute.
That should be a regular thing.
And they realized they would need an overflow room. So they broadcast it in a room down the hall. And there were a lot of people filling that room. I mean, the Lane Auditorium was packed to the gills. People in the aisles, people in the balcony. There was a picture in the Daily Progress that captured that, and you could see how full it was.
Have you ever seen?
Never seen anything like it, ever.
I've
been going
to
these meetings for a decade, and I've never seen anything like it. And it was so one-sided in position.
Yeah.
It was support schools, support the library in Scottsville, and that was the dominant theme. And I think everyone would say that.
Yeah. I've seen the county office building crowded before. I've never seen it that packed, and I've never seen it that packed with people that, 99% of the people there had that same message, it was a bit shocking. I've never seen that before. You've seen it packed with people saying, don't tax me. I've never seen it packed with people saying, please tax your community more to support the schools.
And there were different arguments being made. That was kind of interesting too, Coy, and I think that's, indicative of this community. We have a lot of bright people that come and participate in local government. We'll talk about dredging in a minute. But last night at the dredging public meeting, one of the facilitator commented how, oh my gosh, 45 people have come out to talk about dredging and
welcome
share
to
their
Charlottesville.
Thoughts and put their ideas on the table. And that's what happens in the county as well. So with the budget, and people are putting on very different arguments than we've heard in the past. And I think if you were somebody trying to, sort of script an outcome of a meeting on your side of the issue, and if your issue was schools, you couldn't have scripted it any better, because you had people coming forward saying, I'm at the University of Virginia. I hire people. The first thing people ask me is, how good are the schools?
Of course.
A realtor steps up. I'm a realtor. First thing people ask me is, how good are the local schools?
Yeah.
And it just went on and on like that. So it wasn't the same old usual suspects, although they were there and they spoke. But there were all these new people that showed up with different arguments about economic vitality and how important different things were.
So, I was surprised at the number of business owners who came forward and said, look, this is an economic development project. When you invest in your schools, you raise the economy of the entire area when you invest in your schools. And, business owners came forward and said, please put more money into the schools.
And they were convincing. I mean, I was sitting there just, awestruck at the amount of smarts that, came forward and said, here's why this issue is important to me. So I
now the challenge is there are there are still a lot of people in this community who believe that every tax is a bad tax and every money that goes to government is bad because it's not going to be spent in a good way. And so there is no good tax, even when it's a tax to go towards a child's education, which I personally don't understand. But there are people who truly believe that. And, you know, some of them are on the Board of Supervisors. So that's going to be a challenge.
And that's where we are now. So they had their public hearing. Now we're starting into what are called the work sessions. These don't allow public comment. The public can certainly go and observe. That's where I was today. Sean Tubbs, my colleague, was at one on Monday. And we have a story up about Monday's work session and actually two podcasts that you can listen to if you want to hear the work session. Sean put a timeline on it so you can jump straight to an issue that's important to you.
And that's a really good opportunity to sort of get the sentiment of the board members,
right,
the kind of questions they ask and what they're talking about.
But you know, Coy, having interviewed a number of the supervisors and hearing us talk about it, I mean, coming into through the elections, coming into this budget, what we were hearing a lot of is zero-based budgeting, let's take a fresh look at everything. There must be more cuts we can make. I mean, don't you think that's fair?
Yes. And my response was, if there were more cuts to make, did you think Ken Boyd would have made them already? But that was my response.
Well, and I think Ken would say he had a lot of cuts on his mind and didn't have the votes to pull them off.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I think he would
good
say
point,
that.
Good point.
So now, though, he has a majority. But what was interesting today, Coy, at the end of the work session, this was the second work session. They're going to have a third one on Monday. But at the end of today's work session, Bob Tucker, the county executive, put up his spreadsheet. This is the tracking spreadsheet of things being added to the budget and things being taken out, right?
Yeah.
So he gave his, you know, here's my funding request. And what was stark about that presentation today was not a single thing was added as a new cut. There were no new cuts. All that was new on the spreadsheet were additional things being put back into the budget.
That Tucker had taken out.
That Tucker had taken out.
So there's no new cut. I thought that was one of the whole things that Duane Snow and Rodney Thomas ran on. Ken Boyd said at the first meeting, he said, you know, zero-based budgeting, we're going to...
And Mr. Tucker's response to that was, you know, he got that word in January that there was significant interest in a zero-based budgeting approach. He said, you know what, we're so far along in the budget cycle for this year, I'm not sure I could pull off what you're thinking about. But let me tell you what we do, which is sort of this modified, he calls it a modified zero-based budgeting approach. And so anyway, that sort of negotiation had to take place between Mr. Tucker and the supervisors. But suffice it to say, you know, my observation today was nothing has been put on the table yet that's a new cut. Again, they've got more work sessions and a lot of work to do. But at this point, just hearing from schools, hearing from local law enforcement, social services, parks and rec, at this point, there's nothing new. What they are talking about putting back are things like the library funding.
Go over too well, did it?
At this point, I don't want to get anyone overexcited. These are just placeholders for the discussion. They have to come back and make specific votes to either, you know, if you put in some money, if you put back some expense that you want,
you got to take it out somewhere else.
You got to figure out where the revenue is coming from.
Yeah.
Right? So that could involve two votes.
So you either have to create new revenue or you have to take the same amount of money
Absolutely.
Out somewhere else.
Right. Yeah. You have to have a balanced budget. At the end of the day. So they've put back in, you know, level funding the libraries. They've put back in some money for some social workers that were taken out of the budget that help in the schools. They put back, Dennis Rooker asked that 2 cents on the tax rate be put back in to fund the capital improvements program. 2 cents would raise about $3 million just for local government, just for not just for local government.
Because the CIP, the capital improvements...
was gutted. There's nothing...
There was $0 in it.
For the next decade, there's no plans to build anything.
Yeah. There's no library, no firehouse,
and I'm not even,
no road,
know, back
nothing.
Back in November, Tom Foley, the deputy county executive, said, if we keep the tax rate where it is, we won't have enough resources to fund our debt obligations, you know, to pay the interest on the past debt.
Oh
now,
God.
I don't know if they've revisited that. That's something we need to look at. But
that's scary, man.
So at this point, they're just in the... Supervisor Dorier asked about two things. He wanted the Scottsville Community Center put back in for funding, and he wanted the Howardsville boat launch ramp reconsidered. That one, they ended up... I didn't know about the Howardsville boat ramp. I've taken pictures there. Apparently, it's on private property, and the lease is about to expire. And we have subsidized this lease as a county to make it available for the public to, you know, launch their boats and use the river, right?
Yeah.
Apparently, that's something, you know, again, the state used to be doing. And so the supervisors reached consensus today. Let's not put that back in our budget and fund it. Let's pass that problem back to the state and say, hey, Department of Game and Inland Fisheries, if you really want to have regional access to the James River, Albemarle County is not going to be the only one paying for it.
How much was it, you think?
You know, I don't even know if they put a number on it.
But have we currently been paying
for it? We've been paying it. We've been paying a lease that apparently was a pretty attractive lease with this private property owner. But now that property owner wants to renegotiate. And the county is saying...
And get more money?
Yeah. And the county is saying, we don't want to do that.
Well, thank goodness the county's saying we don't want to do that. You know? I mean, but I got to ask you, though, what kind of money is spent to maintain a boat ramp? I mean, you got to cut the grass and, you know, smooth out the concrete every few years?
I think it's just an access right-of-way, sort of. You know, it's a... you're buying access to the river, Coy.
I never even knew it was down there, did you?
Yeah, we during Pi Day 2008, we went to Howardsville.
But you didn't go to the boat ramp, boat launch.
Oh, absolutely. You did? Well, there's not much in Howardsville, Coy. There's a general store, a couple houses.
So this is really interesting because as far as I'm concerned, this is a bit of some breaking news here. In these budget meetings that are currently being held by the county, they're not cutting stuff. They're putting stuff back in.
Yeah. Now, you can look at that all sorts of ways. And I certainly don't want to encourage the Board of Supervisors to go after my education budget because I do wear that hat, too. But I just find it kind of interesting. I mean, what it says
is... Yeah, of course it's interesting.
What it says is...
It's newsworthy, yeah.
Bob Tucker must have put together a heck of a budget, right? I mean, that's another way to look at it.
Yeah. He must have streamlined it like crazy if the conservatives are coming back to the table wanting to put more stuff into it.
I'm just saying, right now, those ideas are not on the table. Now, they are asking questions. But asking questions doesn't change the budget, you know?
Right. None of this is approved. I mean, yeah, we need to say that. Nothing's been decided yet. They're having meetings and they're talking.
And I'm not taking away from reasonable questions being asked by any of the supervisors about could we do X better or Y better. Those things are being said. But my point is, Coy, to impact the budget, you have to say, I want this out. And you have to be willing, you have to have four votes to do it. And the school board, when we get to that last where we're really refining the budget, we're making separate votes on items to put in and out of the budget. Or it's just simple, we all agree and we reach consensus.
Yeah.
There were a few I voted against that I said, I can't go there. You know, that's a cut I just can't have. But that's a process these supervisors will have to get into in the next week. And so I'm just sort of previewing for the community.
Yeah. Now, what's next week? What happens next week?
Next Monday, they're going to talk about the capital budget, and that's going to be the main focus. Are there things they should be putting back in? Dennis Rooker, I think, is one of the supervisors that's been saying, you know, this is a great opportunity for us to be building things. Steve Kolazar on the school board has said that as well, that in this economic climate—
Construction's cheap.
Things are getting built cheaper. The Meadow Creek Parkway.
What's St. Anne's building over there?
They're building a new lower school.
It's huge. That's a lower school?
That's
Brian, it's
school.
Huge.
The upper school is across, you know, is up further on Ivy Road.
Have you looked at it lately? You can see it when you drive on the 250 bypass over there.
Yep. Well, the thing I'm anxious to have on that project is they're going to have to build a second lane on the exit ramp. You know how the traffic backs up onto 29 sometimes
I know
the bypass?
Quite well, Brian. Yes. That's my exit. Yes.
So they're going to have to build a second turn lane to help get traffic into the school.
Ah,
and anyway,
interesting.
That'll probably help.
Yeah, that's huge. So, but to get back to your point, this is the time to build and expand because it's so cheap to do it. But there's $0 in the county to do anything like that—a library, a school, a firehouse.
Yeah,
there's $0 budgeted.
Well, the
for
libraries
that.
Thing came up, Coy, and Ken Boyd said, you know, he said he was real careful. He said, "I'm not saying we should do this. I'm just saying we should talk about it." And what he said was, we should talk about pulling out of the regional library system as a county.
Whoa, that's newsworthy too.
And he said, and staff's response was, there's not enough time to figure out how to pull out in this budget cycle, but let's talk about it in June at our strategic planning retreat. So they're going to revisit libraries in general in a big way.
So Ken Boyd is suggesting that Albemarle County withdraw from the regional library system.
He said that's something that should be on the table. He said at this point, he's not saying it should be done, but he thinks it should be talked about.
Yeah, well, when you bring it up, something that people should talk about, you're sort of advocating it, aren't you? I mean,
Well, you know, sometimes people bring up ideas because they want more information. They want staff to react to that proposal and explain the pros and cons. And it gives the community a chance to say, you know, it's a trial balloon, Coy. You know, so sometimes the community shoots those things down. Sometimes staff comes back to a meeting equipped with more data and they say, here's why that's not a good idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, Mr. Foley, the deputy county executive, said, you know what, in our capital plan, we have a lot of money that we were thinking about using to build libraries. And we need to make sure we have the right plan for our library system because right now we can't fund it. And so that's something that's going to be talked about through the summer.
Amazing. So when is this all, when do they put this thing to bed here?
At the end of March, there'll be another public hearing. I believe it's March 31st. You have to check our calendar on that. SeaVilleTomorrow.org has the calendar. I believe it's March 31st, and that's the next public hearing where people can react to the Board of Supervisors, you know, final budget and the proposed tax rate. And then the tax rate will be set in April. And then we know how much revenue we get, and then we have to balance the budget.
And what is the deficit now for the county's general fund and the school budget? What are those numbers?
Well, keep in mind, Bob Tucker came in with a budget that was balanced for local government. So the school division's funding request was about $8.5 million out of...
a deficit.
Deficit.
Yeah. And, oh, man, $8.5 million. That's a lot of money, Brian.
It is a lot. But, you know, a lot of those cuts are coming at us from the state level. So it's not – so you could say
– and we don't even know yet what those exact numbers are because the state's budget's not done.
Right. You know, I just –
they're supposed to finish that this week, right?
Before coming on the show, Delegate Toscano had just called me and was explaining to me where he thought the process was. So it's something that changes day by day at this point as the House and Senate are trying to reconcile their two different –
that's supposed to be wrapped
budgets
up like Friday, right?
I believe Friday's the big day, and it'll probably go through the weekend.
And then the governor weighs in with his take on the budget, and then they come back for the reconvene session in, what, April, I think?
So one of the things people might have missed, and I know we got to wrap up here, but...
Can you stay around for a few minutes after a break?
I can.
Okay, because we wanted to get your take on the whole dredging thing that happened yesterday, but go ahead.
When people talk about equalizing the tax rate and returning the amount of revenues to the level they were last year, the thing to keep in mind is... that may work at the local level for local revenues, but you still have a huge deficit on the state side. So it's the state funding that's the real challenge in the county's local budget right now. It's also going to be a challenge in the city's budget, especially on the school side. Delegate Toscano was telling me the percentage that might be reduced from city school funding, and it was over 30% of their entire budget that they could see that scale of reduction, depending on the House or the Senate plan that comes forward.
Wow.
So anyway, the public needs to watch. I mean, it's a lot of things to watch. We're certainly trying to go to all these meetings and report on them and keep on top of it. But it's a moving target at the state level and the local level.
Yeah. And, well, it's unfolding as we speak. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow. He'll hang around for a few minutes after this break for local news and weather.
Last night on the best seat in the house.
That's a tough part of coaching is... it's like you have 13 sons,
mm-hmm.
and you have to have all 13 sons doing
W-I-N-A, Charlottesville, right now, right now, right now, right now, right now, right now.
He said, Drifter, can you make folks cry when you play insane?
It's 5:37 on the clock on the wall. It's about 66 degrees. I hope you're doing well. My name's Coy Barefoot, and this is Charlottesville right now. It's News Radio 1070 W-I-N-A. We're talking with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at SeaVilleTomorrow.org. The phone lines are open at 977-1070. Join the conversation at any time. You said there's a Board of Supervisors meeting tonight. You
there
just
is.
Mentioned that before we went on the air.
Tonight, they are the thing I'm going to cover has to do with the UVA Research Park up on
29
North.
So this isn't one of those big meetings where the a whole bunch of people go and say, save the schools? This isn't that. I mean, there is a public hearing attached to it, right?
As they say on the sports show here, that's why we play the games, Coy. You know, that's why we go to the meetings. You never know who's going to show up. So they have public comment. Anybody can
say
anything.
So tonight's just a regular meeting.
It's just a regular meeting.
Okay.
But on the agenda is a rezoning related to the UVA Research Park. They are hoping to add
which
about
one?
30 acres, North Fork. But they don't call it that anymore. They just call it the UVA Research Park.
I thought there was like the...
You know how we have the university?
Yeah.
Well, this is the research park.
So there was like, there's Fontaine Research Park, then there was the North Fork Research Park.
But they don't call it that anymore. They just call it the UVA Research
Park. What's Fontaine called then?
The Fontaine Research Park.
So there's the Fontaine Research Park and the Research Park.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now you're with me.
I'm confused.
But in my story, I'll make it clear. This is the one near Airport Road and 29
North. The one with the very pretty entrance.
Right. But you know what I found out today? I talked to Fred Missel, who's one of the head guys over there. He said they want the main entrance to really be on Airport Road. So this 30 acres is along Airport Road, the part of it. And they hope to have, you know, two really nice buildings fronting Airport Road. And that they think that is going to end up becoming a more popular way to get into the research park.
They're still trying to figure out a way to make that place take off, aren't they?
Well, it... Percentage-wise, it is very underutilized right now.
Yes, it is. There's a lot of empty space up there.
But, you know,
but there's empty space everywhere. Downtown Mall, 29.
True. But I asked him about that. I said, you know, Fred, when we look at other developments in town, residential, commercial, oftentimes you hear people say who are opposed to new development, why should we approve more homes? Why should we approve more stores? Right?
Yeah.
If we have this pipeline of things that have been approved but not built, why should we keep approving? The county's concern is it becomes sort of stale zoning. You've approved something, and in the case of many developments, they approve proffers that now they probably wish they could do a do-over because they wish they could get a inflation escalator on some of those old proffers they accepted.
It won't be worth a fraction of their
right. So anyway, that's one of the downsides of getting your zoning ahead. In the case of the research park, you know, Mr. Missel said that they really think long term and they really want to build the infrastructure, get the roads in place. And
but aren't there homes up there on Airport Road right across from that entrance? I think there are. When you drive past, what's the name? What's the electronics place?
I
when you drive past
there
their warehouse?
I thought it was right across from the Postal Service facility.
I don't know. You wind around the airport, you go around there, and you go around to the right, and there's Crutchfield, and there's...
Once you turn right, and you're on Dickerson Road. That's Dickerson.
Oh, okay. That's what I'm thinking of.
No. This would be on Airport Road.
Oh, okay. I got you.
So, like, you're on 29
North.
Because
the entrance now on that end of the thing is on a road where there's houses.
Well, there is a road there, and it goes into the Hollymead Fire Station.
Okay.
And this 30 acres wraps around that new fire station, the Hollymead Fire Station. So, anyway, they've got ideas. They have a concept plan. We're going to cover it tonight. I don't know if the supervisors will approve this. They're not expecting a lot of controversy about this.
Yeah.
But certainly, if
I have to tell you, Brian, the thing that comes to my mind whenever I hear the North Fork Research Park at the University of Virginia, I was a Cub reporter back in the day in the 90s, and I was sitting in city council chambers the night that the architects presented their plans to city council for North Fork Research Park because they just wanted to let them know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, dude, I mean, in hindsight, it's laughable. Their vision was, we're going to recreate the downtown mall. That's what they said. That's how they sold it. We're going to recreate the downtown mall out in the county in this place called the North Fork Research Park.
Well, that is not what they're doing. I can tell you that. But I asked them.
Drive through it today.
The parlance is supporting commercial uses is what it's called. So you have this research park, research going on, offices, labs, whatever. And I ask him how much, you know, supporting commercial use will there be? Things like restaurants, you know, banks, dry cleaners, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever those employees might want and might benefit from.
While they're at work, yeah.
While they're at work. And he said that that's a real challenge for them because they want to keep it more research focused. That's their mission. And they really want to let in as little of that as possible.
So the original vision has done a 180 then.
Because
I was sitting there when they presented the original vision. I looked at the drawings. We want to create a mixed-use research park where people will want to come who don't even work there, and they'll have reason to come there and hang out.
It's a very small number that's square footage dedicated to that purpose. I asked him about Fontaine, because at Fontaine, they have pushed back on the county planning commission and said, we don't really want, you know, the dry cleaners and all that stuff here. And one of the things he pointed out, which I hadn't thought about, is because that's a hospital complex, you have a lot of patient pedestrians. My daughter's been one of them.
Other
family members have walked around there. And he said, if you create a destination spot for outside users, then you've got a lot more vehicle trips coming
cars
in.
Cars coming in and out, yeah.
And that puts some of the patients perhaps at more
that's
risk.
That's a good point, unless you can design it so that mixed-use stuff has a separate entrance or whatever.
Right now, up in the North Fork Research Park, which they don't call it that anymore, they have a small grab-and-go kind of restaurant that hardly has any seating. But he says they're just getting to the point where they have enough critical mass where in the next town center they're going to start building, by the end of the summer, they expect to have a full-service kind of restaurant up and running.
The problem with it is very simple. People want to be near the hospital. They want to be near the grounds. They want to be near the University of Virginia, you know, instead of being way up near the airport. And that's a challenge. Those research facilities, they want to be close to the core. They want to be close to the academical village.
In today's world, is that really important when you think about the internet and video conferencing and just everything we can do online?
But there's got to be some motivation for them, because that's what I've heard, that that's one of the challenges. A lot of these companies would love to be here, but they want to be close to, you know.
But that kind of land is just not available around.
I don't know. Where are you going to go? Where are you going to go? Unless those buildings start going way up, and there's no plans for that.
So that's why, you know, they have 525 acres now. They're talking about adding 30 acres. And yeah, they'll have plenty of room to grow.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Gold and silver continue to stay at all-time highs, so now is the best time.
Saying that we're going to take care of your loved one, you know, and treat them the way they should be treated.
Forty-seven minutes after 5 o'clock, I'm Coy Barefoot. This is Charlottesville Right Now. It's News Radio 1070 WINA. Happy Wednesday! I hope you're doing well, and thank you for joining me. We're talking with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville tomorrow. We got a whole lot that we wanted to get to today. And
so last night I was at the dredging
meeting. Yes, your take on that.
It was a good turnout, 45 people or so, I counted. And good feedback. Again, lots of good questions from this community, of course. The proponents of dredging
were
there.
I love this town. Have I told you that lately? I love this town.
The opponents of dredging were there.
I love living here.
So all the usual suspects were gathered, and a good time was had by all. I tell you, the dredging professionals were very professional. They did a good presentation. I learned a lot. It was fun to start seeing pictures of the dredging hardware that might be used if we do dredging.
Like mudcats and stuff?
These are big things, Coy. These aren't little mudcats. These are big things with a huge straw with a spinning cutter head at the end of it.
Yeah.
And then it's got a sucking pipe that sucks up the water and the sediment and whatever it's cutting up.
Yeah.
But sometimes they find in clay, they have to really cut into it to harvest the sediment, I guess.
I've seen the thing down at Rudy's Inlet at Virginia Beach. There's a boat out there that's dredging constantly because you got to keep
that. And
that's
a little easier, though, because you're dredging sand.
Yeah.
And then you can just shoot it out in the ocean.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a little different.
And
they showed some examples of how, you know, one of the things on their wish list, and they haven't gotten into any of the pricing about what dredging will cost. So there are no numbers out there.
It'll be free with a fill-up, Brian.
There's no numbers on what dredging will cost yet.
But you remember back in the day when you could get stuff free with a fill-up? You remember those days?
I do.
When we were kids, when they actually had those? Do they do any of that now? I don't think anybody does that.
So.
Free with a fill-up. Yeah. I'm sorry. A little sidebar.
You know, on their wish list, though, was a lot of land for dewatering the spoils that they dredge out. So they said they can pipe this stuff for miles. That's no problem. And somebody asked, well, how far can you pipe it? And he said, well, how much money do you have? You know, we've heard that before. You know, if you want to suck the stuff out, they can send it as far as you're willing to pay to pump this stuff. But at the end of the day, you need to put it in a spot where the water can be allowed to return back to the reservoir, because you don't want to pump out all your drinking water and have it go bye-bye, right?
Right.
So you need to allow the water to flow back in after the sediment has dropped out of it. We learned last night they're recommending treating the sediment. They literally inject some polymers into the pipeline, and it commingles with the water and the dirt, and the dirt drops out of the water then because of this polymer.
Cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of technology involved. My takeaway from it was and as you probably heard, there are no showstoppers. I mean, they haven't found anything that said it's going to be really hard to dredge this reservoir. My takeaway was they do this kind of dredging all the time.
Yeah.
And it just depends on how much you want to do and where you want to put it. And what's the market for what you take out of it?
You know, whether you're for or against dredging, whether you're for or against the 50-year water supply plan, I think the most exciting thing about all of this is that finally, somebody who really understands dredging and does it for a living has entered the conversation.
Well, but we've had those people here in the past. Hagen and Bryant came to the community and they had a lot of
knowledge. But they did just a presentation. I mean, they didn't do a full study.
They did. But many of the same things they said were repeated by this company last night. So we've heard some of these same arguments.
Yeah.
I think an important point, though, is don't be misled by sometimes headlines that you may see in the paper, because an important takeaway is that dredging,
which means you don't like this headline, dredging
really,
would work.
Well, dredging would work. Yes. I mean, what they said was we can dredge, right?
Yeah.
So they've answered that question, I guess.
And we heard from Dee Dee Smith in the last hour that according to the folks who support dredging, there's a lot of good news in there for them.
Well, but there's a lot of unanswered questions. So we haven't heard about the cost. But the thing I would keep in front of the community is you have to keep in mind how much dredging gets us in water supply. That's the whole reason we're having this conversation. How much does it do for you?
Yeah.
On the long-term water supply needs? And I'm just going to put this number out there. I'm not saying, you know, one way or the other, but just by way of comparison, the Ragged Mountain Dam proposal in the 2006 water plan would generate 5.5 times as much water storage as complete dredging of the reservoir. So again, I just want to get that out in front of people to think this conversation is going to go quickly into the cost of dredging and then how much are we getting out of it, but then back into, I think, how much do we really need for 50 years?
Well, I asked Dee Dee that in the last hour, and she said we need to do, reanalyze this.
She wants a new demand analysis.
Right.
Right.
Because the folks who support the water supply plan, she said not only is it wrong, it's inflated, and we don't need that much water.
And other people are skeptical that the state would let us get away with redoing our permits based on moving the goalpost, as they would describe it. Every community, they would say, would like to come back and say, we don't need as much water as we thought, and we're going to spend a lot less money on a smaller plan, because now we have right-sized our plan to a smaller expectation. The state regulators have already said, we are the most efficient users of water in Virginia.
Rock on.
And we should be proud of that.
Yeah.
But it impacts our ability to conserve more. It impacts our ability to, squeeze more water out of this system that we have.
Yeah.
So I just want to keep that in front
of
you.
Can I ask you a question that's totally not related?
Sure.
What's up with Albemarle Place? Are they going to build that?
Sure.
Tomorrow?
Well, they've been waiting on the sewer capacity. So they need that Meadow Creek Sewer Interceptor. And that's in the works, be done, I believe, at the end of this year. And then,
so that they might break ground on that next year?
Well, I think, you know, they've got to figure out when the market is right for them to start building that.
You know Waynesboro is breaking ground on a new movie theater. Did you know that?
Stadium seating
in Waynesboro, ladies and gentlemen. The bulldozers are on site. I saw them the other day. It's amazing. On Ludewitt Road, right near the Lowe's in Waynesboro. A big, new, huge movie theater with stadium seating. That's impressive.
All right. We'll go to a movie.
We got no Albemarle Place yet, though. Are they going to build this new Whole Foods? What's up with that?
Yeah, that's in the works. That's in the city of Charlottesville now.
It
was going to be an Albemarle Place. Now it's moved across the street
it's
next
over
to the
by
Kmart.
Near the Kmart and the Gold's Gym.
Yeah.
When are they going to do that?
They're working on that.
So, well, you see them out there.
Yeah,
they're moving dirt, but are they building a Whole Foods?
They say they're going to keep on trucking.
Brian Wheeler, he's the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, and he's off to the Board of Supervisors meeting in the county office building. The old Lane High School, built in 1940, I think it was. When did that become the county office building? In the 70s?
That's a good question. We need to put that in Civilpedia. If you're listening and you know the answer, go to civilpedia.org.
I thought it was 72, but somebody told me, no, it was much later. But I could have sworn I thought it was 72.
Good question.
I'm not quite sure when it was. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Coy.
We'll take a break. This is Charlottesville Right Now.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit civillepodcast.com for more.